Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Catherine Shen. Longtime U.S. Senator Joseph Lieberman died yesterday. He was 82. Lieberman represented Connecticut in the U.S. Senate for more than two decades. In 2000, he made history as the first Jewish American on a major party's presidential ballot when he became Al Gore's running mate. His family said he died due to complications from a fall. His wife, Hadassah, and members of his family were with him when he passed. Lieberman was known for his centrist politics and almost became Republican John McCain's running mate in 2008. In the years since, he served as founding chairman of the centrist political group No Labels. We'll be talking about his legacy this hour, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WNPR, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Our newsroom has been compiling tributes from elected officials across Connecticut. We'll be hearing from some of them this hour. Senator Richard Blumenthal will join us in a moment. But first, we have Governor Ned Lamont, who is on the line. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Governor.
Good morning, Catherine.
So we've read your reaction hours after the news broke about Lieberman. You know, what's going through your mind now, Governor?
We first met 16 years ago, sort of an inauspicious beginning, because we had a pretty feisty campaign that involved support or opposition to the war in Iraq. At the end of that race, we shook hands, and we have stayed, friends ever since. And I saw the senator just a couple of months ago at the alfalfa dinner where we compared notes about 16 years ago and the war in Iraq and other things.
And I know you have to go soon, Governor. Just want to ask real quick, you know, what do you think his legacy will be for Connecticut, to Connecticut?
Hey, look, first of all, it goes back to 1970, state senator, attorney general, U.S. senator. He's been, along with Chris Dodd, just incredibly important fighters for Connecticut down in Washington, D.C. And more recently, I think his legacy is related to stability and independence and working across the aisle, something that's sadly lacking down in Washington, D.C. right now.
Well, thank you so much, Governor, for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Catherine.
And joining me now is the one and only Colin McEnroe, who's the host of the Colin McEnroe Show, weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern here on Connecticut Public. Thanks, Colin, for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you just listened to Governor Lamont's response. What are your thoughts?
I covered that campaign. It was very, very unusual. In a way, you could take that campaign and unpack a lot of the interesting contradictions in Joe Lieberman. For example, at the end of that campaign, so it became a three-way campaign. Ned Lamont won the primary and took the Democratic nomination away from a sitting incumbent, a very prominent sitting incumbent. That doesn't happen very often. And Lieberman started his own party, which was called Connecticut for Lieberman. The Republicans nominated a kind of a peculiar guy named Alan Schlesinger. Ultimately, that election wound up with Lieberman winning about 50% of the vote. Lamont got about 40. Schlesinger got about 10. And it came out later that the Republican Party wanted Lieberman. They wanted Lieberman to win. They didn't help Schlesinger at all. Elizabeth Dole later told Lieberman she didn't raise any money for Schlesinger. She was running that committee. Karl Rove essentially told Lieberman that George W. Bush wanted him to keep his Senate seat. So in a way, some of the contradictions of Lieberman, which stretch across decades, I mean, I first started covering him in 1979. I actually met him as a kid earlier than that. Kind of an interesting story. But a lot of those contradictions sit in that 2006 election.
Well, and then we're talking about him today and with all the outpouring of reactions to his death. You know, anything that stands out to you or surprised you?
in a way, maybe my own reaction surprised me the most. I mean, I really did know him very well. I covered him. We had a blow up on the air that in 2006 that turned into national news. I felt I got in my car and Doobie McDowell, former journalist and now runs a communications firm, had texted me the news. And there was a real sort of sense of incompleteness. This is a man that I really admired a lot in the 70s and 80s. We had the kind of relationship where we could have a conversation, not necessarily for publication, about really interesting issues and questions. And then, and I don't want to in any way, you know, this is the wrong day to talk about a lot of the frustrations with him. But he changed. His politics changed a lot. And he and I struggled a lot around those changes. He came and appeared on my show in 21. He wanted to do the show in 2021. And I had my producer, Betsy Kaplan, say, would you like to talk to someone else? All you guys have to do is fight. And he said, no, I want to be on Colin's show. And we actually had a pretty cordial show that day. I feel like there was one more conversation I wanted to have with Joe Lieberman. It never occurred to me that he was going to die, you know, this soon. And so in a way, my own sense of incompleteness is the thing that surprises me the most.
Well, I wonder if that's something that resonates with a lot of people since the news was so sudden. And can you talk about the conversation that you wanted to have with him?
Well, we started out being very interested in questions of politics and faith together. And so in 78, Lieberman, who was an Orthodox Jew, had a chance, probably a halfway decent chance, to become Ella Grasso's running mate in her second bid. And he didn't get it, partly because he wouldn't go to the convention because it was on the Sabbath. And he took the Sabbath very, very seriously. And it was the first time I'd seen a politician do something like that. Just say, because he was clearly an ambitious man, but he was not going to break the Sabbath. And that turned into a long series of conversations about politics, faith, and things like that. Things changed, you know, as I step back and think about it, things changed a lot in 88. In 1988, he ran against Lowell Weicker, a very popular, in his own way, sitting senator. But Weicker wasn't popular with his own party at that point. And Lieberman, essentially, although a Democrat, ran against him from the right. He was helped by Republicans. William F. Buckley endorsed him. And in a way, that began, I think, Joe's transition to centrism and often, you know, very much, I mean, more than centrism, strongly allying himself with the Republican Party instead of his own.
And how were your conversations with him different with your conversations with other politicians, would you say?
I've been thinking so much about this in the last, you know, since last evening. I think when we had problems with one another, we had the kind of problems that a journalist and a politician can have if they imagine something better, you know, and we really did have a very good relationship for quite a while. And I think, you know, when you can imagine a better place for you and the person you're talking to, if you can imagine, there's a kind of intimacy. I have no problem disparaging Donald Trump. I have never thought anything positive about Donald Trump. With Joe Lieberman, it was so much more complicated because you could see so much good that was there. One thing that's worth saying here, and I think Dick Blumenthal will probably want to talk about this too, the Attorney General's office in Connecticut, as we know it, was essentially invented by Joe Lieberman. It was more like a ceremonial post prior to that. And you were kind of the lawyer for the government. That's about it. You know, this whole idea that you would represent the interests of consumers, of embattled people, that you would take on corporations, that you would file these highly public lawsuits, that you would be in the public eye a lot. I mean, prior to Joe Lieberman, nobody knew who the Attorney General of Connecticut was. And when Blumenthal came along, he basically took that new DNA structure for the office and maybe even made it more of what it was. But Lieberman was the person who thought, you know, an attorney general could be a lot more than what it has been in Connecticut in the past.
Well, it seems like he was someone that really works with either changing a DNA completely or restructuring it. Senator Chris Murphy, who now holds Lieberman's former Senate seat, said something similar. He issued a statement and that read in part, in an era of political carbon copies, Joe Lieberman was a singularity. He fit into no political box. He defied party orthodoxy. He simply did what he believed to be right for the country and what was right for the state he adored. And here's Senator Murphy speaking last night at an event sponsored by the Connecticut Mirror in the room.
Joe Lieberman knew what he believed to be right. He didn't care too much about whether that lined up with the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. That was Lieberman from the minute he showed up in the United States Senate.
Your reaction, Colin?
I think first of all, that's all true. And yeah, that whole one of a kind thing, I saw that quote too. I think he said, this is one of one in another part of it.
Right.
Absolutely. There is no, I wouldn't even know who to try to compare him to. He certainly invited comparisons. He was deeply, deeply attached to John McCain. And he and McCain and Lindsey Graham called themselves the Three Amigos, and they would, you know, travel around making trouble or whatever. But he wasn't like them either. And I do think that it's very, very, very hard to put him in a box. I mean, you know, in 08, when McCain was considering him, McCain really wanted him as a running mate. And Sarah Palin was kind of foisted on McCain. People were saying, well, no, because Lieberman's position on abortion rights is inflexible. And there's no way we'll lose some of the Republican Party if you run with this guy. And so, you know, even though Lieberman ultimately became famous for tracking to the right, for getting kissed by George W. Bush in the halls of on the floor of Congress, and he, you know, he was very, some of his progressive policies, abortion rights, gay rights, the environment, electoral reform, he never let go of that stuff, which really made him hard to define.
Well, I mean, kind of answering this question, but we mentioned earlier that he was known as a centrist. He once said himself that he didn't fit comfortably into any conventional political boxes. You yourself, Colin, just mentioned that there's no box to fit him in. But what was his political ideology? Does he have a box that we can, you know, he can be in?
I think he's in a lot of different boxes. Mm. I mean, he, you know, he was a child of the kind of JFK revolution. He was a volunteer on Bill Clinton's one of Bill Clinton's early campaigns. No, Bill Clinton. Sorry, Bill Clinton was a volunteer on Lieberman's state Senate campaign. Clinton later got mad at him because in '92 Connecticut went for Jerry Brown. White House kind of blamed Lieberman. So, I mean, and all of that stayed intact in a lot of different ways. He was also very much a hawk. I mean, he rarely met a weapon system he didn't like, and he often turned pretty quickly to the idea of military intervention as the right way to solve a problem. It really got him in trouble in 03. I mean, you know, a lot of Democrats went along with the resolution to invade Iraq, including Chris Dodd, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden. But Lieberman stayed with it, even when that whole invasion proved to be wrongly thought out, a very wrongheaded thing, and one with disastrous consequences. Lieberman wouldn't let go of it. So there was that kind of hawkishness. And then there was this notion of bipartisanship. And obviously, you know, one of the things people are talking about today is no labels, which is something of his child. He has a lot of children. The AG's office, he essentially, if anybody invented the Department of Homeland Security, it's Joe Lieberman.
Something we'll get into later for sure.
Yeah. So no labels, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. He's kind of known for seeking out some kind of middle ground. It looked to a lot of us as though the middle ground involved the Democratic Party shifting pretty far to the right on a lot of issues. But there's no question that, you know, I mean, look, John Stewart had a really great Joe Lieberman impersonation that he did on a regular basis. He did him as kind of Droopy Dog, this cartoon character. But that's how big a figure Lieberman has been nationally, is that, you know, if you're John Stewart, you got to have a Joe Lieberman impersonation.
Well, and we want to revisit your interview with Lieberman from 2021. And this is what he said about being a centrist.
Both parties are struggling within themselves. I mean, the Democratic Party has a struggle, as we see in the Congress now, over some of the legislation between, the progressive, so-called, in the House Democratic Caucus and the moderates, et cetera, in both chambers. I don't support centrist solutions because they preserve the status quo. I support them because it's the way to get things done and make some progress in our country, solve big problems that we have, and as I say, seize opportunities that we have. The important thing to say is that what I mean by centrism is not the same as moderation. That centrism is different. Being a centrist is different from being a moderate. You can be a centrist if you're a left or right or Republican or Democrat or a moderate or independent for that matter. The key definition of being a centrist is that you're willing to seek common ground with people who don't agree with you, but think that something should be done on whatever the problem or opportunity is you're talking about. You're willing to come to the center, talk to them, see what you agree on, see what you can negotiate to get something done. And that's the legislative process. It's the way our country is legislatively has always worked best.
Well, obviously, he said this to you on your show, Colin, but any thoughts about what he said today? You mentioned contradictions earlier. This seems to be on the mark.
I mean, obviously, he's not wrong.
Right.
We have a huge problem with partisanship in this country. It is nearly dysfunctional as a result of the kinds of divisions, which have gotten worse even in the short times. That was December 21, I think. It's gotten worse even since then. He's not wrong about that. The question is, how much do you give up from your side to get to that moment of compromise? And I think that question kind of defines a lot of the valences of Lieberman's career and how he's perceived.
And just a quick reminder for our listeners that you can also join the conversation. Did you have memories of Senator Lieberman? And what do you think about his legacy will be? 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WNPR. Or leave us a comment on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So, Colin, we've been talking a lot about his centrist politics, and he was also a proponent of bipartisanship, which is something that you've mentioned as well, which is could feel like it's a bygone era as we speak today. You know, how did he bridge the political divides? You know, how did he work across the aisle?
Well, I mean, first of all, this is a time when it was not unusual for two or three or four senators to go out to dinner with their spouses, and there would be two Democrats and two Republicans. There was more sort of socializing. I mean, one of the reasons, for example, that Elizabeth Dole helped him in 06 was he was close friends with the Doles. He and Hadassah were close to them. He did it through his personality a lot. You know, there were prices to pay for that. Certainly what he did in 08 infuriated Barack Obama. They had heated words on the floor of the Senate. We never actually found out what that exchange was. Everyone was trying to lip read it. But, you know, he does stand for a better time. It's a better world when the two parties can collaborate. And he was very much a torchbearer for that. So when we got into disputes, it was over that question. How much do you give? I want to just say one other thing, because this is a solemn day, and I think it's worth pointing out about him. One of the things Joe Lieberman stood for, to me, early in his career, was a kind of honesty that was an integrity that was deeply, deeply needed in Connecticut. Connecticut, circa, you know, 1978, 79, it was a pretty corrupt place. And the Democratic Party was, particularly maybe in the state Senate, was full of people who were not exactly paragons of virtue. Lieberman was scrupulously honest. I was a kid. I was an office boy in a lobbying firm. He was famous even then. You couldn't give him anything. You couldn't buy him lunch. You couldn't give him anything more expensive than a tuna sandwich. That's all he would accept. And he really did stand for a kind of reform of that. And as a wave of young Turks came in, I guess it would have been about 78, Bill Curry, Cliff Linhart, Marcella Fahey came in. He was their mentor. He was the guy, he was the Senate Majority Leader at that time, and he really did stand for substituting a kind of integrity for what was a pretty degraded process at that point. So, I mean, my fondest memory of him is of that guy whose honesty and principles would not budge and didn't mind pushing back against his colleagues.
Well, we'll be talking more about that guy as we continue this. Colin McAmerill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Kat.
And we'll continue this conversation after a quick break with our Wheelhouse host and co-pilot, Frankie Graziano. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. Loneliness can be a significant health risk to people of all ages. Dr. Laura Saunders, a psychologist from Hartford HealthCare's Institute of Living, talks about social isolation and why we need to connect in person.
Loneliness actually is a pretty significant health risk for people that struggle with social isolation. It affects their blood pressure, it affects their immune system, it affects your willingness to get up and get out, and can cause some not just emotional issues, but health problems as well.
You're not alone. Dr. Saunders explains how important it is for us to look to others and get out of our comfort zone.
I like to talk about social isolation as not just that individual's problem, but it's a community problem or it's a family problem. We need to connect with others. We can take space at times as well, but we need to step out of our comfort zone and do things to connect with other people. It's life-saving.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Catherine Shen. This hour, we're discussing longtime U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman's political legacy. He died yesterday at the age of 82. And here with me to co-pilot for the rest of the hour is Frankie Graziano, who's the host of The Wheelhouse on Connecticut Public, airing during this same time slot on Wednesdays.
Good
Hi, Frankie.
Good morning. So good to talk to you this morning.
As you as well. And we also have with us John Craven, who's News 12 Connecticut's political reporter. John, thanks for being with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And we also have with us Yvonne Udoma, who's the WSHU Public Radio's senior political reporter. Yvonne, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Catherine.
And for our listeners, just a reminder that you can also join the conversation and talk about Senator Lieberman's legacy, 888-720-9677, or leave us a comment on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So, Frankie, you've been listening to Colin and my conversation earlier. Thank you. Well, it's all Colin. What's your reaction to what we've heard so far this hour?
You know, it's just a reminder that 82 years old, even what we're talking about nowadays with people's age in politics is still young. Because of that sense of incompleteness that Colin said, that he talked about where he wanted to have that one last conversation with Joe Lieberman. Recently, Mark Pazniokas, who's a friend of ours,
right,
who works for the Connecticut Mirror, had a conversation with Joe Lieberman that he ultimately didn't know was going to be his last conversation with Joe Lieberman. And it airs in an obituary rather than a different story than it was supposed to be. So what I'm taking away from that is there's still this sense of incompleteness, particularly with the No Labels Party, as you guys got into. There was that effort to try to find a candidate for No Labels that he thought would be able to compete with Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and the Republican and Democratic machine in this country. So, yes, that sense of incompleteness is kind of what I'm focusing on at this hour. And then now I'll kind of jump in and ask some questions, I guess, here
Go
with you
it.
As well. Ebong, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Nice to talk to you this morning, Ebong, under difficult circumstances. But hey, back in the 1990s, Lieberman, as we haven't really talked about yet, was a critic of then President Bill Clinton. It's ironic, I learned in the past story that Bill Clinton worked for Joe Lieberman when he was younger. But he rebuked.
Well, when he was at Yale Law School, he volunteered for Lieberman's Senate campaign.
Yes. He rebuked Clinton for his sexual relationship with, I'll remind our listeners, a much younger Monica Lewinsky. How did that land with Clinton? How did that land with Gore? How did that land with Democrats?
Well, that probably was what was responsible for him being picked as Gore's running mate in 2000, because that stood him out in the Senate, because even though he voted, he didn't vote to impeach Clinton, he came out with a very, very powerful statement against Clinton. And that seemed to enhance his integrity. And that was one of the reasons why I believe Al Gore picked him, because he wanted to show that he was different from Clinton.
And John, I want to bring you in this conversation too, especially with what Ebon just said. You know, what are your thoughts in this moment?
Well, you know, yeah, that sort of, you know, was the key strategy for Al Gore in 2000, right? I mean, you know, you were coming out of the Monica Lewinsky scandal, and Al Gore was really trying to distance himself from that and set himself apart. And that was a big reason why he picked Joe Lieberman. And, you know, in hindsight, I think some historians have questioned whether that was the smartest strategy, because, you know, in spite of the Lewinsky scandal, Clinton still had very high poll numbers. And I think some people feel like maybe Gore and Lieberman distanced themselves too much from Bill Clinton, because he did leave office as a popular president.
Go for it.
Go ahead. I just want to remember, if you remember at that time, Lieberman ran for both the Senate and as Al Gore's vice president. That's how he got back into the Senate in 2001. And people were questioning the fact that he did not give up his Senate seat to run as vice president. That was kind of unique at the time.
Right. And what was the reaction from local politicians at that time, Ebon?
Well, people were very proud of the fact that we had a Connecticut native on the ticket. And Connecticut went big for Al Gore in 2000. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court decided that race.
Well, U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal issued a statement shortly after Lieberman's death was made public, describing how he helped to define and frame an era of history. And Senator Blumenthal joins us now. Senator, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And so, Senator, you've shared that you've known Joe Lieberman for over 50 years now. Can you tell us about him and anything that we're not hearing about him at all?
You know, the quality that really struck me in Joe Lieberman, and maybe unappreciated by a lot of us, certainly by a lot of politicians, is he was a listener. I disagreed with Joe Lieberman a number of times. He was ferociously independent, sometimes infuriatingly so, but he always listened. And even in disagreement, he was affable and gracious and even smiling. So I think that sense of civility is something very important in today's politics, missing from today's politics all too often. And then, of course, his bipartisanship reaching across the aisle. You know, nothing gets done in the United States Senate without bipartisanship, because a 60-vote margin simply can't be achieved unless there are some members of the other party willing to work together. And I think working with Joe Lieberman in the United States Senate, I saw him forge alliances and make common cause with colleagues. And it's a fact about his leadership that was true throughout his career, going back to the state Senate in Connecticut, where as majority leader, he had a 19-17 margin, and he always had to knit together alliances with members of the Republican Party.
Senator, it's Frankie Graziano from Connecticut Public. Good morning. Colin McEnroe, our colleague, was on the show earlier. He credited Joe Lieberman for making the Attorney General's office what it is now. So I want to ask the former Attorney General of the state of Connecticut, what influence did he have over your legal career, particularly at the time when you became the state's Attorney General?
Joe Lieberman showed how important the job of state attorney general could be in protecting people. And that's another great quality of Joe Lieberman. He stood up and he spoke out for people. He really cared about the people of Connecticut. No matter how far or high he went, Connecticut was really always in his heart. And he loved the story of a friend of his when he succeeded Lowell Weicker as United States Senator. And of course, I succeeded him as state attorney general. He said his friend told him that Connecticut got a better United States Senator and a better attorney general. So he had that sense of humility. I never really quite believed that he believed it, but he really saw the position of state attorney general as an advocate for the people of Connecticut, not representing the state government of Connecticut, but the people of Connecticut. And that's the tradition that I tried to expand and carry on, fighting for people, everyday people of Connecticut, on consumer issues, on environmental protection, on child abuse and neglect, on antitrust and other kinds of economic fairness issues. Joe Lieberman really showed what the job could be.
Well, and I think a theme that we're hearing here a lot is Lieberman really did a lot of barrier breaking. And Senator, as we heard earlier, he was also the first Jewish American candidate on a major party presidential ticket. Can you talk about what did that mean to the Jewish community at large?
Immense pride and joy, but it showed something profoundly important about America and Al Gore, frankly, that America was
moving beyond a divide or a barrier that had existed for a long time. And it, I think, meant a lot to the Jewish community that Joe Lieberman was a barrier breaker, a risk taker in that way. He was always a fighter willing to work uphill to break prejudices and biases. You know, as much as we talk about him being a maverick, he was at heart a Democrat. He fought for gay rights, for women's reproductive care, for civil rights and voting rights, for environmental protection and consumer issues. And so he was a centrist and a mainstream Democrat, and his faith really mattered to him. It wasn't just that he was Jewish, but he was observant, and he spoke about his faith very publicly, sometimes, I think, making people a little bit uncomfortable from time to time, but still with deep conviction and conscience. He spoke about it from the heart, from his gut.
Can we jump into that centrist kind of policy that you were talking about? Where was Joe Lieberman on current politics?
I think Joe Lieberman was very much a moderate and a centrist, and most of all, a bipartisan worker across the aisle. You know, when I take people to the floor of the Senate, I show them that aisle. There actually is an aisle. Democrats sit on one side, Republicans sit on the other. So it has a real physical meaning to reach across the aisle. And I think in today's politics, he certainly would be regarded as a centrist in believing in reproductive rights and gay rights, in a strong national defense. He was a deep believer in supporting Ukraine. One of the last conversations I had with him a number of weeks ago was about the importance of aiding Ukraine in the supplemental. So I think he would be regarded as a centrist Democrat.
Can you tell us more about that correspondence you had with him recently and maybe what it meant to you?
I spoke with him at the security conference, which is held every year in Munich. He was a regular attendee with John McCain. The two of them went together, and they often traveled together with Lindsey Graham. I traveled with McCain as well. And, you know, they believed very strongly, Joe Lieberman did, that we have an obligation to NATO, our alliances around the globe, which make us stronger. And in speaking with Joe Lieberman about Ukraine, he made the point, and it is true, and I've made it repeatedly, that right now Ukrainians are bleeding and dying on the battlefield. If Putin succeeds, if he manages to conquer Ukraine, Americans will be doing the bleeding and dying, because Putin will continue to invade other countries, whether it's Estonia and Lithuania and Sweden and Finland and Moldova and Romania and Poland. They're all at risk. They're members of NATO. We have a NATO treaty obligation. We have to come to their defense. And Joe Lieberman saw the stakes involved in enabling the Ukrainians to successfully defend their country against this war criminal and brutal atrocities, the kidnapping, the murders that Putin has supported, which is the reason why there's a warrant for his arrest from the International Court of Criminal Justice. And he believed that we have a moral as well as a political and international obligation to come to the aid of Ukraine and support this supplemental aid.
Well, and Senator, we have one last question for you here. And you have such a unique relationship, personal relationship and professional relationship with Lieberman. Now, how will you remember Senator Lieberman?
I will always remember Joe Lieberman smiling and listening and talking about his family. He was a man of really deep convictions and conscience, unafraid to disagree. And certainly I disagreed with him on a number of very important issues, but I will always remember him smiling and, in effect, saying, you know, well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree. There'll be another issue where we agree and we're going to work together, and there'll be another day for us to have common cause. And I regret that those days are now over.
Senator, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, those conversations you had with him late, and for joining us on short notice. We appreciate it so much. Thank you, Senator Blumenthal.
Thank you. Take care.
John Ebbong, I hope you got to listen to that. Just give me an idea of your reactions on our exchange with Senator Richard Blumenthal. Ebbong, can you start?
Well, you know, he said something about his honesty and integrity. And even when he disagreed, you could sense that he was coming from a place of true belief. And it brings to mind what happened after the 2006 election, where he was challenged by now Governor Ned Lamont. And he won the three-way race as an independent under a Connecticut party. Not a Connecticut party. He was under a Connecticut for Lieberman party. And right after that, in January of 2007, he was at the inauguration of Governor Rell at the time. And I approached him because just a few days before, Connecticut for Lieberman party had been taken over by people who were opposed to Lieberman. And I asked him, you know, the vehicle you just used to get back into the Senate has been taken over by people opposed to you, and they're trying to kick you out of the party. What are you going to do about that? And he turned to me and smiled and said, I don't care about that. I'm in the Senate now. I'll worry about a party 6 years from now. I have 6 years to concentrate on what I'm doing in the Senate, and I'm not concerned about that. And it struck me that here, you know, he had just used this party to get reelected, and he could care less because he'd gotten what he wanted, and he was very honest with me. And that was the kind of person that I remember Joe Lieberman as being, you know, always straightforward.
Well, I think straightforward and smiling seems to be the theme with Lieberman's, part of Lieberman's legacy. John, I want to ask you too, you know, what you were listening to Senator Blumenthal as well. Any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, Senator Blumenthal talked about how sometimes they had infuriating policy disagreements. And, you know, privately for years and sometimes publicly, Democrats have grumbled about Joe Lieberman, especially on things like the Iraq War and, you know, the fact that he backed John McCain in 2008. But really, policy wise, he was pretty well aligned with them. I mean, you know, the senator talked about how Lieberman was really out front long before a lot of other Democrats were on LGBTQ rights. I mean, he was instrumental in scrapping the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in the military in the early 90s, reproductive rights, environmental protections, even going back to his time as the state attorney general. And that's part of the reason why his close friend, John McCain, was unable to pick him as a running mate in 2008, because those positions would just take him too far to the left of the Republican base. So, you know, he was a guy who obviously reached across the aisle many, many times. But at his heart, I think he was sort of a traditional liberal.
Frankie Graziano, Ebbong Udama, John Craven will be. Before we go to break, I do want to read Al Gore's statement that was issued last night. Joe was a man of deep integrity who dedicated his life to serving his country. He was a truly gifted leader whose affable personality and strong will made him a force to be reckoned with. That's why it came as no surprise to any of us who knew him when he started singing his favorite song, Frank Sinatra's My Way. And doing things Joe's way meant always putting his country and the values of equality and fairness first. We'll continue this conversation after a quick break. You can join us. What do you think about the legacy of former Senator Joe Lieberman? Give us a call, 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was dark, this is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Catherine Shen. Back with us to walk through some of the local reactions to the death of longtime U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman is Frankie Graziano, Evan Udoma, and John Craven. So last year, I want to share, too, that Connecticut Public's All Things Considered host John Henry Smith spoke to Lieberman about the centrist political organization No Labels. He was the founding member of this organization, and here's what he had to say about moving both parties closer to the center.
Well, Republicans tend to focus in on border security and keeping immigrants out. Democrats focus in on the unfairness to immigrants who want to come in. The truth is, the American people tell us when we ask them, we need rules for who can come into the country, so the border does need to be secured. But they also feel that immigrants make a big contribution to America, and in fact, we ought to increase legal immigration. So, I mean, that's an example, I think, where both sides have taken a hard position, refused to compromise. Maybe guns are another one. The Republicans tend to focus totally on the Second Amendment right to bear arms, and the Democrats want to talk about gun control. The truth is, there is a constitutional right to own weapons in our country, but the American people that we've talked to make very clear that they don't want dangerous weapons in the hands of dangerous people, and so we come out in favor of a total background check, even a gun shows as well, and a prohibition on people under 21 owning guns, and a ban on the military-style weapons like semi-automatic being sold to citizens. So you can do both. The parties are failing the American people because they're rarely willing to do anything but attack for political reasons, and that's what No Labels is trying to break up. We will never run a third presidential ticket, a bipartisan ticket, if either or both of the parties begins to move back toward the center and commits itself to working with the other party to solve some of our problems instead of reflexively fighting each other on the big issues that make us a weaker country.
John, I want to ask you your thoughts about what we just heard. You know, is it moving closer to our center, to the center, a real solution given our polarized politics today?
Is that a rhetorical question?
You tell me, John.
No, it's definitely not moving towards the center. But it's really interesting, that clip you just played, because, you know, Lieberman has gotten so much flack for potentially playing spoiler, right, with this No Labels movement and potentially handing the election back to Donald Trump. And, you know, Frankie, you mentioned Mark Pazniokas from Connecticut Mirror had some extensive conversations with Lieberman about this. And one of the things that Joe Lieberman made clear was that he did not want this thing to play spoiler and hand the election to Donald Trump. And if their polling indicated that would happen, they would back off and not field a candidate. And, you know, he also had a very complicated relationship with Trump, we should add. You know, he sort of reluctantly came around to backing Hillary Clinton in 2016. And then a few months after Donald Trump got in the White House, he openly flirted with the idea of taking over the FBI for Trump, even met with Trump in the White House. Trump said, you know, he's one of my top candidates, traveled with Trump, I believe, in 2018. To Jerusalem to celebrate moving the U.S. embassy there. He gave Trump a lot of credit for that. But as he told Mark Pazniokas, ultimately, Lieberman really soured on Trump, felt like he was a threat to democracy, and didn't want this no labels movement to push him back in the White House.
Complicated in Trump. I think he has an even complicated relationship with his family there, John. In recent years, I understand he was writing a book. Joe Lieberman was writing a book and working as a consultant at a law firm. Ebong, what do we know about what Lieberman was up to with that?
I have no idea what Lieberman was up to. But I do.
John, did you hear anything about that with the book?
I did not, but I'll tell you. Last night, I interviewed a filmmaker who's creating a documentary about Lieberman. And this guy, Jonathan Gruber, has spent a lot of time one-on-one with Lieberman over the last few months. The film is going to be called Centrist, which I think pretty well sums up Lieberman's career. And he told me that he wanted to do the film because there are so few guys like Lieberman left in Washington, and he felt like that would be a real loss. And you know, Gruber obviously didn't anticipate this to be a memorial film, as it's turned out to be. But I know that's one thing that Lieberman spent a lot of time on the last few months, is working on this film with Gruber.
And we only have about 3 minutes left, unfortunately, but I do want to ask Frankie, Ebon, and John, each of you, you know, what's Joe's legacy to the people of Connecticut? Frankie, go for it.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are going to think recent, and they're going to think about no labels, but ultimately it's going to come down to his role as a senator probably in Connecticut, and representing Connecticut for so long, from 1988 to 2012, and ultimately probably being the first candidate really to make waves in Connecticut like that, to make it on a presidential ticket there. That was a very big moment in America.
Yeah, making waves definitely seems to be another theme here. Ebon, what about yourself? What's Joe's legacy to the people of Connecticut?
You know, one of his big legacies to the nation and to the state of Connecticut is the Department of Homeland Security. He was very instrumental in creating that department. And also cleaning up Long Island Sound. He was a very big environmentalist and pushed the environmental agenda in Congress. So those are two big legacies that Lieberman leaves.
John, we got about a minute here. You know, what are your thoughts about Joe's legacy to Connecticut?
Yeah, I think consumer protection. I mean, Colin and Senator Blumenthal really hit the nail on the head. I mean, he was the first full-time attorney general, really, in Connecticut. And he made the office a warrior, a champion for the consumer. Blumenthal greatly expanded that. William Tong carries on that tradition. And, you know, I think that's probably one of the biggest impacts he's had here in the state of Connecticut.
You've been listening to Frankie Graziano. Thank you so much, Frankie, for being with us. You were also listening to John Craven. John, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Ebon Udoma, you've also been amazing. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time and being with us today.
Thank you, Catherine. And bye to Frankie.
Bye to Frankie. He's waving at you. I'm Catherine Shen. Today's show is produced by Katie Pellico, Tess Terrible, and Meg Dalton. Our technical producer is Dylan Reyes. Download Where We Live anytime on your favorite podcast app. And thank you so much for listening.